Doogie.
Sam.
I feel like I've got a decent gauge on how good most teams are at this stage of the season. But Real Madrid? Now that is a complex case. Please, my friend, help me figure out how good this team actually is.
Alonso's tactics just dismantled Barcelona, but that's only a small part of what feels like a bigger master plan, which is already transforming Madrid.
Real Madrid are back to being terrifying. What Alonso has built isn't just a winning team, it's a new Real Madrid philosophy, disciplined, modern and lethal.
I think they've got off to a good start. You know, Xavi's a great coach, he proved that at Leverkusen. I think he's an exceptional talent.
They're one of the most confusing teams in the game right now because their results this season have been fantastic. They're top of La Liga. But every time I do watch Real Madrid, I do kind of come away feeling a bit underwhelmed.
Yes, hello and welcome to the latest episode of The Truth. Episode number?
9. Series 2.
Thank you. I went on holiday for 1 week, yeah. Lost track. I genuinely have lost track of it. Like, I do.
My counter top left of my dock every time. Yeah.
Very good. It does not take me much to be knocked off course, as you've probably learned over the last year or so. You are hearing Doogie Critchley. You are hearing Sam Tye. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. I'm slightly delirious. I had a pretty extraordinary day yesterday, which I won't go into too much detail about the journey back because it was absolute hell. But it was basically we're doing a talent show at Sunderland and we got Sunderland players to be the judge. One contestant dropped out as we were on our route there and I was supposed to be co-producing it. I ended up trying to break the world record for Big Mac meal eaten speed, which is 59 seconds. And I won't reveal whether I broke it or not, but Noah Siddiqui and Wilson Isidore were judging me. We then had a hellish journey back, went to bed at 2:30, had to get up at 6:30 to go on Sky. So it's been a lot going on. Stomach has recovered, but it has been a fascinating last 24 hours in my brain.
Jeez. I've been complaining all day about my 3-hour journey home from the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
You saw great football, though.
I did. I saw a particular goal that we can talk about, but I saw good football. I saw a good game. But I've been moaning that the cat didn't let me sleep. I got up at 7, I dealt with the kid, then I went back in and I had to go and do some more work. And you had it actually worse.
It was, yeah. It was a hell of a day. What was funny is on the train, like, people, I find when you've got a long, long delay, people really separate into groups. I went quiet and just like, let's just deal with this internally. There's so many people that on a long journey will be like, when is this fixed? What is happening? And you're like, I don't know. Nobody knows. Just get on with it. Oh, it was driving me absolutely nuts. But we got there in the end at 1:30 into King's Cross.
So you're not going to tell us if you broke the world record for fastest time eating a Big Mac.
Big Mac, fries and a drink.
And the world record is 59 seconds.
Okay,
so you definitely didn't break that. I guess my big question is, did Wilson Isidore break that record?
He absolutely loved my attempt. It was hilarious. He said it was the best thing he'd ever seen.
Okay.
Which I think he probably needs to get out a bit more. But he was very enthusiastic about all the contestants. And it's coming out on Sky quite soon in the next couple of weeks.
That's so lovely.
Stay tuned for that.
One final question on this is, I watched on Monday night Noah Siddiqui do his best to get sent off for the first 30 minutes of the game against Everton. I trust he'd calmed down by the time he met you and didn't try to rake your Achilles, two-foot you in the shin, your Big Mac out of your hand.
The factor when you do these shoots with players and there's a game the day before or 2 days before, you're like, just don't get sent off. And 30 minutes in, not only were Sunderland getting absolutely battered by Everton, but Noah Siddiqui was, you know, on a thin, thin line. Mm. But he was amazing. I thought 20-year-old, obviously just arrived from Belgium, I thought he was going to be quite shy. He was the life and soul of the party. He was Simon Cowell on steroids in terms of judging. It was awesome.
But had he been sent off on Monday night, he may not have ever been allowed to do what he did because often clubs clamp down on the communications when that sort of thing
happened. So we were pretty lucky on that front. Yeah. But Sam, how was your break? How was your week off?
Well, before we go to that, because it wasn't really a week off, it was the most intense week of my life.
We speculated you might be taking over at Panathinaikos as sporting director.
It would have been nice. Actually, probably as stressful as chasing a near 2-year-old around a hot country, which was not fun. We got thrown out of a little trinket tourist shop because he was throwing magnets across the shop.
Did he smash a lot of stuff?
He broke one magnet.
Okay.
The guy just came out and said, guys,
could be worse.
Come on,
though.
Not good enough. And I said, I cannot disagree with you. But it was just 7 straight days of parenting. Mm-hmm. And usually I don't do that. I palm him off to the childminder. And he's gone for a little while. It was pretty intense. But on the subject of things that can go pretty wrong for journalists, on Tuesday night, I was at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium to watch Spurs beat Copenhagen. I was sat in the media lounge next to a journalist from Africa lives in London, but is African, has an African focus. And he was there and he was really hoping to watch and speak to Mohamed Kudus. Mm-hmm. This was the very first squad of the season that Mohamed Kudus did not make because he had a small knock. Yeah. So he was initially very gutted about that. But like all good journalists, he came up with a plan B. Nice. He said, okay, Mohamed Kudus played at Ajax with the Copenhagen goalkeeper, Dominik Kotarski. So I'm going to speak to the Copenhagen press officer and I'm going to try and get a chat with Kotarski about Kudus. He spoke to the press officer and he was told, let's see how the game goes. Let's see how the result goes. And maybe you can speak to him. Dominik Kotarski went on to put in one of the worst goalkeeping performances I have ever seen in my life. Culpable for a minimum of two goals. And of course, there was no access after that. So plan B was foiled. He tried. Yeah.
Poor guy. That's a good effort from him, though. That is a very good quick thinking. But yeah, Spurs, having been so abject at the weekend against Chelsea, a game I was only watching in the pub compared to you with the in-stadium experience, they were terrible on Saturday night. So to respond in that fashion, yes, it's only Copenhagen, but Xavi Simons and Florian Wirtz, both having great nights in the Champions League, having struggled so much in the Premier League in the last few weeks as well. Nice stuff.
Yeah, it was nice. Although, as Jack is continually laughing at me over the last 48 hours, I was mostly there to do a Xavi Simons hate watch. And he put in clearly his best performance of the season.
Yeah.
So that one didn't really go to plan.
I mean, we'll see what he's like back in the Premier League this weekend, but he's definitely struggling slightly with the intensity. And actually, I was listening to a podcast yesterday where Seb Stafford-Bleuler, who'd spoken to Florian Wirtz, or at least spoken to someone who'd spoken to Florian Wirtz, said that Florian Wirtz is finding it just the Premier League, just the pace of it, but just the 90-minute pace of it. There's not a single lull in the game over here compared to in the Bundesliga, which we did discuss in our Bundesliga episode.
We did indeed, yeah. I'm sure he'll be fine.
I'm sure he's too talented.
Very cool. Right, well, speaking of Liverpool, They played Real Madrid.
They did.
On Tuesday night. And Real Madrid are the focus of this week's episode. It's a superb topic. And I can tell you that because it's one of those that I really don't know how I feel about it, which makes it a great topic. I do not come in with any strong opinions here. I come in with some theories. But really, this is what this podcast is about. Let's talk it out. Let's talk about how good Real Madrid actually are. Where would you like to start, Doogie?
Well, I think it's probably just worth doing a little bit of scene setting, sort of why are we talking about this? Why is this a good topic? And I think it is a good topic because after 11 league games of the season, Real Madrid find themselves 5 points clear of Barcelona at the top of La Liga. So it's a very good time to discuss this topic because their only aberration so far this season domestically was that humiliation at the hands of Atletico Madrid. 5-2 defeat. I'm sure we'll cover that during this podcast as well. But since then, up until last night, as we record this on Wednesday, their results have been pretty impressive. Kairat 5-0, you'd expect that. Villarreal 3-1, Getafe 1-0, Juventus 1-0, Barcelona 2-1, Valencia 4-0. Not always the most dominant performances, but results-wise, very, very good. And their Champions League form prior to last night as well, they'd beaten Marseille, Kairat, Juventus. Then comes the game at Anfield, where they were thoroughly outplayed, and were it not for Thibaut Courtois producing probably the goalkeeping performance of the season so far, making 8 saves on the night, it could have been completely different.
Felt quite familiar for Liverpool, that one.
It really did. But you compare it to their start of 24-25, so last season, Real took 6 points from their first 5 Champions League games. They lost to Lille, they lost to Milan, they lost to Liverpool in that run. And after 5 games, so on the 27th of November, they sat 24th out of 36 teams in the league phase. So they went off to a disastrous start in the Champions League.
They were one of the teams that I feel like they just didn't really twig how important the league phase games were. Like there were a few of them last season where a lot of clubs were like, we don't really understand how important these games are. So, you know, we don't really know how it's going to cost us. And then by 4 games in, they were like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
Oh, crap.
And they did really ramp it up. And after 11 league games last season, so the same stage in the league, they sat 6 points behind Barcelona. They'd drawn 3 games and just been beaten 4-0 at home by Barcelona as well. So now, as we record this, we are 21 games into Xabi Alonso's tenure, and it seems like a good time to discuss what we've seen from his side so far and what it could mean for the rest of the season. Because my opinion, Sam, on La Liga's title race in particular, has undulated quite dramatically from the first month to the second month and even where I'm at right now.
Yes, absolutely. I was dead set on Barcelona to begin the season. I was then dead set on Real Madrid after about 5 games, and now it's all come back into question once again. I love flawed teams. You know, I love competition, and I love the unknowns of it all. And we're dealing with quite a lot of that in the Premier League right now, and La Liga is effectively no different. But Alonso has been, was he probably the first major manager to be installed for a club World Cup and get like that run in?
Mm.
First, certainly at a major club. Inter, Christian Kivu.
Yeah.
So we're in uncharted territory here with these kind of guys, where they get sort of transported into the seat in June, and they're like, right, off you go. And so by doing that in June and having a Club World Cup campaign, and Madrid got quite far into the Club World Cup, it breaks up the summer. It makes it quite dysfunctional, makes it quite disrupted. I can't imagine that's particularly easy. And I've been sat here wondering whether or not that was a boon or a curse for Xabi Alonso, because on the one hand, he had more time than ever. But on the other hand, he has less genuine rest time for his players. So I think for the start of the season, Real Madrid are one of those teams that have been quite clearly affected physically by the Club World Cup. And you just don't really know how that's going to play out over the course of the season. It's really difficult to know who's going to stay fit. And he's already had to deal with a few problems, like a right-back crisis.
Yep.
Danny Carvajal went down, and Trent Alexander-Arnold sustained a grade 2 hamstring injury in August. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not normal. And so he's already had to negotiate that. He's already had to negotiate a Rodrigo Vinicius temper tantrum, mm-hmm. effectively, and deal with that, and deal with the press and all of the rumours that surround it, and everything that surrounds Vinicius Jr. whenever he says anything on Instagram. This is not an easy job at all, and it started really early. But did he get a blank slate, or did he get given a really tough job just right from the off in terms of remoulding the team?
I think it's worth pointing out for sure that Real Madrid, on the back of last 10, 15 years, last year was a really disappointing season for them. So in the three major competitions, La Liga, the Copa del Rey, the Champions League, they went trophyless in that for just the third time in the last 10 seasons. And 84 points was 11 fewer than they finished with the previous campaign. They lost 6 league games. They only lost one the year before. They lost the Copa del Rey final to Barcelona after extra time. There was a 116th minute winner by Jules Koundé. They then had 3 players sent off in that game. And El Clasicos were a disaster for them all season long.
Yeah, offside game. Oh my God, Mbappe.
It was crazy. And they scraped through to the knockouts of the Champions League, as we already said. They then beat Man City, a really poor Man City last season, 6-3. They beat Atletico Madrid on penalties in a tie that Atletico Madrid were really unfortunate not to win.
And in a shootout that literally changed the rules of football.
Oh, that Julian Alvarez. Oh, and then they got their sort of what was coming to them against Arsenal. 5-1, one of the most sort of dominant displays by an English side against Real Madrid, probably this century, I would say. And there were, of course, reasons for that. You know, Toni Kroos left before the season started. In came Mbappe. That's a huge ego, a massive player to sort of readjust your side around. Danny Carvajal misses 61 games. Eder Militao, 59 games. Even David Alaba, 17. Rudiger, 12. Modric was being phased out the side before leaving this summer for AC Milan. So there was a lot for any manager to contend with last season. And Ancelotti, it did feel like maybe the sort of time had come, a natural conclusion to the end of his second spell. And Xabi Alonso, in terms of personality from Carlo Ancelotti and style of management, is very, very different.
Yeah, it is. Alonso clearly has much more of a focus on the defensive side of the game. As much as his team score goals, and his Leverkusen team scored a lot of goals, and they played some really good stuff, and they kept going to the end and kept attacking and scraped how many victories from the bottom of the barrel, fair play. And this Real Madrid team, they score a lot of goals. He is so much more defensively focused and defensively minded than Carlo was. And so he's picked up a team that literally did not do anything from a defensive standpoint, except from, in the end, defend the box. It's not a criticism of Carlo, because he sort of trusted his players to figure it out. And they may not have won anything that year, but again, they won most of their games. Mm-hmm. More often than not, it will work for Carlo over the years. But they didn't high press. They didn't counter-press. They didn't put up a particularly good mid-block. The strikers, in the end, you were looking at sort of like a sort of 4-4-2. Vinicius and Mbappe played up front together, more or less, against Manchester City in that 6-3 aggregate loss. And they literally just stood there while City had the ball at the back, like traffic cones. It's like, that can't be the play. Like, you don't have to press aggressively. You don't have to go crazy. But if you look at a team like Crystal Palace and the way they sit in the mid block and then the way they explode out of it, or they block passing lanes, or they curve their runs and try to force, they did none of it. They literally just stood there. So Alonso had a very big task here because he wants his forwards to play ball with him defensively. And you're already seeing him picking out his kind of favourites. Have you noticed with the playing time? Like, I know some Madrid fans are asking why, like, Franco Mastantuono is playing so much football when there is conceivably better options, even though he started very well. He puts the hard yards in. He counter-presses like a demon. And also, he's quite smart off the ball. So Alonso likes him. Mbappe has improved so much in this area so quickly. It's been really interesting to watch. And he's had to basically force Vinicius to do the same thing. And he did so by initially playing Rodrigo instead of him for about a three-week period, just favouring Rodrigo, who has always done the hard yards. It's fascinating to watch, you know, when you get a coach, even with the gravitas of Xabi Alonso, even with those Champions League victories under his belt, one with Real Madrid, and you're still asking the question, can he get them to do it? The early signs, in my opinion, are largely pretty good. Would you agree?
I do agree with that for sure. I think it's whenever I see a manager emerge, I'm always thinking who influenced their career. And Xabi Alonso, the three main influences on him would have been Rafa Benitez,
yep,
Jose Mourinho and Pep Guardiola. So discipline would be a key part of that, both in and out of possession.
Not a bad three.
It's not a bad three at all. And his dad was a coach. I mean, he's bound to always be a coach, and the way he thinks about the game, and apparently the way he even takes part of training right now, takes part in training and takes training.
Yeah, but I hope it's not one of those situations where when Newcastle appointed Alan Shearer as manager to rescue them, and he was taking part in that opening training session and he was by far the best striker on the pitch.
Yeah.
So demoralising for the lads.
I think that must be a little bit challenging at points as well. But he did the same thing at Leverkusen and it went down very well. But I think what's interesting about the concept of taking over at Real Madrid and instilling discipline when you haven't had it ingrained in your game for so long is everyone at Real Madrid has a massive ego. You've arrived at one of the two biggest clubs in the world. Some people would say by far the biggest club in the world. Vinicius Junior, Rodrigo, they have been stars of Champions League winning sides. They have won Champions Leagues with a more unstructured approach. Convincing them to do the hard yards, convincing them to be rotated, that's obviously going to rub up against players differently. Mm-hmm. And someone like Vinicius Junior, you know, I don't think any of us will really understand, at least in this room, the sort of hardship that he went through growing up. And it's left him with this real attitude to struggling to kind of being told no, and just being a feeling of sort of the world's against me, which I totally understand.
But he channels that in his game.
He does.
It's literally part of his playing style.
It works really effectively, but this is a guy that clearly doesn't take well to instructions. In some cases, he doesn't take well to being left out of the team. He takes things very personally, I think is what I'm really looking for. The Ballon d'Or being that perfect example of it. But the characters that he brought in this summer, I think, are really interesting because he went with injecting youth effectively into this side. Yeah. Key part of it. So their net spend this summer was £145 million. That was fifth in Europe, but it was way short of Arsenal, Liverpool. It was around the Man United and Spurs level as well. And no other Spanish side spent more than £95 million. And this is a kind of what's been going on for the last 5 years in Spain. There's Real Madrid and Atleti spending quite a lot of money. Barcelona spending very, very little whatsoever. And it's given them a huge leeway financially because they've won so many trophies, etc. And Barcelona have had so many financial issues. And Barcelona have kind of been saved by these La Masia graduates that have come through at just the right time. But in terms of who they signed, Dean Howson arrives from Bournemouth. Hugely exciting talent. Everyone wanted him. Liverpool, Arsenal were after him. Newcastle wanted him as well, but he's never going to go to Newcastle. And he's, I think, played really, really well, aside from that Atletico Madrid game.
And Anfield.
See, I was on the train for this, so I actually need you to kind of fill me in on Dean Howson and Anfield.
Yeah, he wasn't good at all. Yeah, I mean, look, Real Madrid did not play well, so it's not like we're saying, Dean Howson, you were terrible. But, like, he was really unsure on and off the ball in like a really uncharacteristic way. There was a moment quite early in the game where he just got completely caught on the ball by a Liverpool player chasing him down and the ball got put into the box and I think Szoboszlai skied it over the bar. And then later he was dawdling under a ball and let it bounce and then it got nicked off him and he just looked very like shaken. And it was the same look on his face that in the Atletico game when he got beaten to the header by Sørloth and he just was like, oh, I didn't see that coming. And it's a shame because for the most part, I've watched him, you know, when they play Valencia, when they play Getafe, whoever it is, he swans across
the
pitch in the way that he does. And he's the guy at the back, in the absence of Trent, that has played the risky passes, the difficult passes, the progressive passes. And because, you know, Eder Militao doesn't really do that. And, you know, if you've got Valverde or Carvajal up front, they're more motors than passers. Mm-hmm. Carreras also is more of a motor. So you need someone to be able to distribute it through and without Trent. And Huijsen's really stepped up to that role, except that there's just been two games where it's kind of fallen apart, and it's probably not coincidental that he's been really poor in both of them.
Yeah, when the eyes of the world are most on you as well. Really, really difficult displays, particularly that Atletico Madrid game that I watched as well. He was all over the shop, as were Real Madrid, and the kind of goals they're conceding. It just didn't feel like anywhere close to their levels this season. The player that's also dictating play is Alvaro Carreras as well. Signed for €50 million, Man United must be kicking themselves that they didn't integrate him more appropriately. He's fourth in Europe behind Vitinha, Maxim Lopez and Pedri for passes completed. He is dictating play at the back for Real Madrid as a new signing from the Portuguese league. It's really, really impressive. He's completed more than 50 progressive passes, more than anyone else in that Real Madrid squad. He ranks first for blocks and interceptions, second for defensive actions, so that includes interceptions and tackles, and clearances as well. Then you look at the new signing that also arrived in Franco Mastantuono. Pretty inexperienced player. He'd only played 64 games over in Argentina for River Plate. People were really, really excited about him. But this guy, although he doesn't necessarily have the stats to back it up, I do think some of his displays, particularly early on in the season, this is just a grinder. This is pure work rate, and it's quite contagious. And it felt like Xavi Alonso was making an example of the kind of player that would feature and the kind of baseline of intensity that he wanted across his entire side. And Mastantuono's have been a big part of that. And then there's Trent, which we've already touched upon. He's barely played at all. He's created one chance in the league. He just came back from injury last night, coming off the bench. Pretty brutal to maybe introduce him at Anfield, but they did need a goal, I suppose. Yeah. And the reception was quite something. But yeah, we can't really judge Trent so far, but he does have a battle against Dani Carvajal to even get in this side. So that's kind of the new signings. But in terms of changes from Ancelotti ball, we've kind of hinted at a few, but what have you kind of noticed, Sam?
So just quickly on Carreras, because I'm a noted not fan.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't like him?
Not massively.
Really?
You know, I have my specific...
Your vendettas.
some players I just look at and go, I'm not sure.
What do you not like?
So I don't like the fact that when he plays badly, he looks a lot like the bad version of Marcus Alonso. But when he plays well, fine, absolutely fine. And he has been good. Like, I'm happy to accept that. He's played 982 league minutes, which is the most of any outfielder, which will explain some of the hefty statistical tallies, because a lot of the guys are getting rotated. There's really only a couple of these players that aren't getting rotated. Tchouaméni, who is like absolutely crucial to Alonso's system, and we'll get onto that in a moment. Valverde, who has to play because all the right backs are injured, and he's brilliant, not to disrespect him. Mbappe, who has been chosen as like the alpha attacker. Alonso has very obviously said, you're my dude.
You're my guy.
Vinny, Rodrigo, Mastantuono, to an extent, Galer, although Bracken different position. Diaz, yeah. You're all fighting for a spot to play next to Killian, okay? Because Killian's my guy, and he's repaid him with 13 goals in 11 league. I think it's 18 and 15 overall, isn't it? Like, superb season. And Courtois played every minute, goalkeeper. These are the guys that have always played. And Tchouaméni is key to the question you asked me, which is, you know, what are we sensing here in terms of change? So Mastantuono is picked in the team a lot of the time because he defends, because he counter-presses. Xabi Alonso has tried to install a counter-press at Real Madrid. It takes ages to install an actual pressing structure, but it doesn't take that long to tell people, counter-press for 5 seconds when you lose the ball, and if you lose it, drop back, which is exactly where they were for the first 2 months of the season. And then you have to try and build in the pressing elements after that. Every time I watched them in the first 2 months of the season, they counter-pressed like crazy. If they didn't win it back within 5 seconds, they just dropped into a low block. They don't mess around in the mid-block. They don't drop passing lanes. They just drop. Drop, 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 and just defend the box. So Mbappe, Vinny, Rodrigo, they're all putting the work in. You know, genuinely impressed with the fact that Alonso has managed to get through to them and say, you're all going to have to work a lot harder. all of you, the star names. It's integral to my system. And their counter-pressing has been really effective over the course of the first 2 months of the season, especially in La Liga against admittedly like much worse teams. Mm-hmm. But you look at the XGA, expected goals against, in a lot of the games they've played in La Liga, and we're talking about 0.3, 0.5. You know, Valencia at the weekend, they absolutely destroyed, barely gave up a proper chance. Several games I've seen this season where they really haven't had to break a sweat in the defensive third because either they've counter-pressed and swarmed the ball early on and just refound it. If the opponents do try to play a really risky pass into the middle, Tchouaméni just appears and just takes it off everyone. And sometimes that actually, they convert that into a goal within about 3-4 seconds. He's that influential. So he always has to play as well. So it's pretty obvious that Alonso has picked out his key men. Mbappe's my goals and he's my stretcher in behind. Tchouaméni is my midfield marshal. He is going to pick up any stray balls that the counter-pressing produces. And it's working. It's generally working really well, except for when it goes wrong. And it's terrible. Twice. Like, Madrid have conceded, 10 goals in the league this season? 5 of them came in one game. Mm-hmm. So it's 5 in the other 9. Now, I'm not in the business of just like completely excluding the Atletico game from the stat sheet because it happened. But this tells you that for the most part, like 90% of the time, they managed to keep the ball very far away from their goal. Thibaut Courtois has made 19 saves in La Liga this season, which is the fewest of any goalkeeper in La Liga. Now, it's Real Madrid. Courtois shouldn't have to be worked really hard unless they're playing top teams. But last season, he made the sixth fewest saves in La Liga. So they weren't in the top five in terms of making sure he wasn't worked. It's a big step in the right direction. So that's the big change that I've seen from Alonso. It's that concerted effort to actually defend.
Yeah.
It's and the attack, I don't think he's decided to change too much. You let me know if you think differently, but I think he's gone, Carlo had it free form, these are good players, I'm going to let them weave their magic and try to feel their way into this.
Yeah, I think there's an element of, in terms of the attack, and I definitely agree with everything you said in a defensive sense, but I think he's also prepared to play a little bit more direct than Ancelotti was in the past. They rank 5th in Europe, so of the 96 teams in Europe's top 5 leagues, 5th for long passes completed, which is, you know, they have a lot of the ball, but that is still a crazy high number. Mm. And no side in Europe has completed more switches of play as well, which is something that I really remember from Leverkusen as well.
From Xabi Alonso.
Yeah, exactly. Building up on one side, very cute triangles, make a lot of space, Jeremy Frimpong, Grimaldo on the left or right-hand side, wherever you want to go on that. And you talk about getting back into that deep block. I totally agree with you. Barcelona, you think of Barcelona under Hansi Flick, what do you first think of, aside from Lamine Yamal probably, is that high line,
yep.
That kamikaze high line. They've caught, Barcelona that is, their opponents offside 32 times this season. That's first in Europe. Meanwhile, Real Madrid have done so 8 times. Only 4 sides in Europe of the 96 teams have caught their opponents offside less. So they are very prepared to just, as you say, get back, get organised, if they don't win the ball in the final third, because no side in Europe has completed more tackles in the final third. So they're a very extreme side. It's, as you say, press, don't get it, get back and kind of sort of shut up shop. And you can see the intensity of this side has kind of been brought about by the dropping of average age as well. So they went from an average age of their formation being 26.3, which was 8th in Spain, to 24.8. So nearly 2 years. It's about a year and a half, sorry.
That's a big drop.
And only Barcelona are younger. And Barcelona in the last few years have just played kids, basically. And there are 18.2 tackles per game, despite averaging over 60% possession. So they are very, very prepared to put in a shift at the moment. And if you're not prepared to put in a shift, as he wants, he's made the big calls. And we've said for years, Real Madrid at their worst have felt like the balance between player power and effectiveness has been lost. Mm. Whereas right now, I think he would be willing to take the occasional defeat. And as bad as they were at Anfield, by all accounts, I was stuck on that bloody train, and Atletico Madrid, or against Atletico Madrid, I should say, that he will probably take those one-off defeats every month or so for a picture of a side improving on with and without the ball. But it is help, Sam, I think it's worth touching on, some of the individual displays of players as well and how he has maximised the talents of a Kylian Mbappe, for example.
Yeah, some good ones. Before we go there quickly, I just looked up the switch passes just because I wanted to know who was doing it. based on what you've seen, Jack, feel free to answer too. Who do you think the Real Madrid player who has played the most switch passes is? The answer is 14, and a switch is 40 yards the width of the pitch.
Dean Huijsen, I would have thought.
It is Dean Huijsen. 14 switches this season. I don't have it to hand, but I was looking up for other reasons Arsenal's switch passes earlier today, and if memory serves, Declan Rice, who is frequently towards the top of the Premier League switch chart, was on 5, I think. I think he was on 5. Huijsen's on 14, Valverde 11, Eder Militao 8, Vinny 7.
Vinny 7?
Alvaro Carrera 6. I mean, they're switching and switching and switching again. It's a lovely stat. Just thought I'd look up the players. Right, individual performances. Mbappe. Yeah,
special.
So, do you remember, right, we talked about him in Christmas time, right? Yep. And we actually, one of the things I remember saying about him was, I think he's trying too hard and I think he's overthinking his finishes. He's not overthinking his finishes right now. So there was one of the goals he scored recently, actually, I think it was the Atletico, in the Atletico defeat, where he burst through and he's right of goal, right foot. And it's like, I know exactly where he's putting this ball. It's flashing it across the goalkeeper, low and hard into the far corner. I think Oblak also knew exactly where that ball was going. He hit it so hard, so confidently, with such technique and such confidence. Like, it was just unstoppable. Even if you knew what was going to happen, it was by you in a flash. And quite a lot of what he's been doing recently has gone by people in a flash, whether it's the footwork, stepping into the box, outside, inside. It was even a bit of that at Anfield last night. He wasn't amazing, but he still managed to occupy three defenders at once at times and just sort of dance through them. Jude Bellingham did it a little bit as well. It was quite good. The finishing is just remarkable. And it's 18 goals in 15 in Champions League and La Liga. He's absolutely cooking. Like, if Harry Kane hadn't done what he's done, then we'd be talking, and to be fair, Haaland as well, yeah, scoring in like 11 consecutive games until, of course, he met the mighty Ezri Konsa. We'd be talking about this quite a lot more, I think, but it's just been kind of overshadowed. I mean, Mbappe has been amazing.
Yeah, he absolutely has. I mean, level with Haaland for most goals in Europe on 13. He's first for XG. He's taken 10 more shots than anyone else in Europe's top five leagues. Only Haaland has got more on target. So Haaland has been more efficient in front of goal, which is what you kind of think of him this season, because Man City haven't been particularly free-flowing just yet, although we are recording this prior to their game against Dortmund, and they did look significantly better at the weekend with Ryan Cherki in that side as well. But what I also like about Mbappe, he's second for chances created in the entirety of Europe this season as well. This is a player that has, it's a bit of an over-exaggeration to say he had a difficult season last year, because he finished with the European Golden Boot. But his former side did win the treble and he was left with nothing. So it wasn't a successful season from a team perspective. But now this is a player that just feels so comfortable in that role, in those surroundings. And you can maybe overanalyze too much about having Vinicius Jr. out the side and whether he's just enjoying working with some workhorses alongside him, Mastantuono, occupying defenders and harassing and harrying them. I think he's been absolutely immense. And yeah, also, another factor right now, they've just got another superstar back from injury in Jude Bellingham.
Well, before we go to Jude, because he brings up a few questions here, yeah, in terms of how he fits into the team. And he can play like six positions, so it will be fine. And also, he's been really good recently up until Anfield. So there's no questions and concerns over Jude Bellingham. But in his absence, there was a man feeding Kylian Mbappe through balls over and over again by the name of Arda Güler,
yeah,
who had just a sensational start to the season. And I just very quickly, because it's on the same page as the switch passes, just had a look. Güler, 8 through balls completed this season, the most of any Real Madrid player by quite a distance. Mastantuono is actually next with 5. So it's a rise of the kids here. A 20-year-old and an 18-year-old thriving on Xabi Alonso's trust. But Güler has effectively just like taken a role in this team. And that's not to doubt his quality, because I think we all know he's a really special player. But to actually just go ahead and take a role in Real Madrid's starting 11 on a consistent basis is not easy, with or without Jude Bellingham. And they both played with each other at Anfield, alongside Vinny, alongside Mbappe. So it's not like there's any room for one. And Güler has been someone that's really jumped off the page to me early this season for Real Madrid. Not just the through balls, a few goals, some good assists, some really cute play, just what we know he already is, but with end product. And if you can vibe with Mbappe, if you can service him with the passes, you will play for the team. It is that simple. It's the old Ansu Fati, Lionel Messi combination of, well, if Messi passes you the ball, you know he's good. And it's here, it's like, if you can get the ball through to Mbappe behind the line, you're good. You've got a place in this team.
100%. And what's more satisfying is that Real Madrid throughout, or Real Madrid fans, I should say, throughout the entirety of last season were saying, Ancelotti, play Gula. And whenever he did get on the pitch, he was pretty much amazing last season as well. But it was seen as a real symbol of Ancelotti kind of losing his touch, is maybe a little bit brutal, but maybe not being quite as on the pulse as he could have been. And I get it. You've got Luka Modric, who was also playing incredibly well when he was used last season as well. But that squad depth now, look at the players that have barely featured this season. You know, Carvajal and Bellingham have started 4 league games. Camavinga started 2. Rodrigo, 2. Brahim Diaz, 2. Brahim Diaz, really useful player to have in your squad as well. Always comes on at the right level. Trent played 2. Rudiger, 1. Alaba, 1. The depth here, I think people have slightly underestimated Real Madrid this season in terms of what they can achieve. Potentially looking forward, like Arsenal and Bayern, and look, there's a bit of recency bias in this because Bayern have just beaten PSG down to 10 men and Arsenal are just 8 clean sheets in a row. I think it's a record since 1903. They're an absolute machine right now as well.
Dean had some interesting things to say, didn't he, Jack, about the lads from 1903 on
He did. Hi, by the way.
Hey, Jack. We haven't even brought you in.
I mean, he was like, I think sports was a bit different. Like, we were talking about a variety of clubs. And it did bring me up, like, one of the first players I think that signed for Chelsea, and when they were formed, around that kind of period. Like, literally, his nickname was Fatty. He played in goal. So, like, I think things have changed a little bit.
Things are a little bit, Dean mentioned the pig's bladder balls, and, you know, so that at the point where Arsenal set this clean sheet record,
it's a different time.
They were in South London. Yeah.
And they conceded one shot on target in the month of October in the Premier League. It's absolutely nuts. So look, Arsenal, Bayern, they look like Champions League favourites. People are kind of sleeping on Barcelona because they're not quite at it right now. But it's difficult to imagine, Sam, Real Madrid not being sort of deep in the conversation, because they have, as you say, taken this league phase a lot more seriously despite the loss at Anfield.
Okay, so we're kind of getting to the nub of it here, because we need to talk
where are they at?
Where are they? And, like, you know, it is difficult to imagine Real Madrid not being in this conversation. La Liga title challenges, absolutely, and look every bit as though they can go all the way with Barcelona and really give it a good go. Champions League looks tough. I think we've been shown the line a little bit, maybe early doors. But the interesting thing about this conversation for me is they look a bit like a slow burn team for the season. So we've talked about how Xabi Alonso was basically started with carte blanche in terms of, you know, the team did nothing defensively. They had no defensive structure last season at all. So he gets to go in and he gets to change that. On the one hand, it's great because you get a clean slate. On the other hand, it's bad because there's loads to do. Mm. And he has to be a very busy man on that training pitch. And you don't get a lot of time when you play every 3 days. But we're seeing Madrid take on these characteristics. We're seeing the counter press installed. We're seeing it literally create goals in La Liga. Absolutely. You know, winning the ball back and within 5 seconds, it's gone in the back of the net. We are also seeing the first signs of an actual pressing structure outside of counter pressing coming into play. So a bit more structured in terms of picking your moment. So you're in your mid block or your low block, but you dart out and you pick your moments. You press a certain player at a certain angle, and you go and really maneuver that ball into an area where you can go and win it. We're starting to see that come into play too, which wasn't there under Carlo. If all of that really, really sinks in, they will be quite frightening, because their free-form attack is excellent. And I'm usually quite critical of, like, free-form attacks. You know, oh, let the players drift. I'm quite critical of that. However, when you have a cast of players like this that are this good and for the most part have played together for this long, there is no problem with letting them just figuring it out. Like, let Vinny and Mbappe end up on the left wing together, and drag 5 Liverpool players over there with them, and then have another guy stood on the other side. Hi, Rodrigo, switch ball. You know, that's all fine. All of that is completely fine. There's no issue with taking Carlo's free-form, relaxed attacking template and saying, I'd back you 6-7 players, Goulaire, Bellingham, all these guys. I reckon you can break down just about any defence, because you have the experience and the reps together and you have the quality. Once the defensive stuff really settles in, and it will take all season, if not all of next season too, that's when they start to get quite scary, if it really takes. Because at the moment, it's inconsistent. And that's why in two games this season, they have completely fallen apart. And of course, in one, they worked out. They were very good in the Clásico. And that was just, that felt like a statement win.
Yeah.
So they feel like a slow burner. And it's not for me to say I just don't know if they're going to be, you know, at the level of Bayern or of Arsenal next April or May. We just don't know, because we don't know how long this stuff will take to layer in. If it sinks in, everyone else should be on alert. It just depends on how much they can take on in a relatively short spell of time.
Yeah. I mean, at Real Madrid, you don't really get a transitional season. Florentino Perez will be instantly expecting to challenge. But given the seismic change of, you know, Ancelotti was effectively in charge. I don't know, Zidane then took over in the middle, but it was about 10 years there with his deputy then taking over, etc. So it was a huge seismic change in the summer, a real drop of average age and experience. Carreras, Huijsen, like these haven't played at the top level for very long, if at all, in Huijsen's case at all. So that would be fascinating. What I would say is Barcelona will also potentially get a lot better throughout the season as well. They'll probably eventually sort of find the balance without Inigo Martinez, which felt like a huge departure late on in the window as well. They've played a lot of this campaign without Rafinha, who would have been in Ballon d'Or contention were it not for Ousmane Dembele last season. I mean, he still was in Ballon d'Or contention. Lewandowski has missed so many games. They're kind of at the moment, I mean, Yamal's not even been anywhere near his best, which is kind of frightening, has kind of been playing through injury as well. The best player so far for Barcelona is Fermín López, probably this season. And you probably wouldn't expect that come May is still the same story. So it's going to be an absolutely epic La Liga title race. For now, I don't feel sure on either one of them. I just think it will go very deep and they'll probably be separated by 3 points or fewer. It feels like that kind of campaign. And then in the Champions League, Jack, I don't know whether you've got any thoughts about them in the Champions League, but they feel like they're going to be in the discussion.
Yeah, I think they will be in the discussion. Like, it does feel... There are a couple of caveats to this, right? Like, I think that they are doing well. I think they are moving in the right direction. I think that we're seeing the fruits of Xabi Alonso's labour, which obviously took a little bit of time to settle in. Those first couple of games in the season weren't particularly convincing, right? Like, they weren't great, but equally he got almost zero pre-season because his entire pre-season was the Club World Cup. So that's to be expected, I think. My one question is, one of the things that's been thrown around a lot this season from a Premier League perspective has been, are City over-reliant on Erling Haaland, right? Like, that is a topic of conversation every time anyone brings up Man City. I've not heard anyone suggest this about Real Madrid, and yet we are talking about Kylian Mbappe starting the season. One of the things I will say, Sam, in terms of, you said earlier that there was there's some elements of Carlo's attack that remain, and I agree, like the free-form element of it. I feel like Kylian Mbappe looks far more comfortable. And I know, as Dougie pointed out, like he scored a ton of goals that season. He looks already far more comfortable as a nine.
Yeah.
And there was a good bit from Carl Anker, actually, on Twitter. And look, don't take Twitter polls as a variation of truth, but just kind of get the feel and the general sense of it. And he put up a poll saying, is Kylian Mbappe in the best five centre forwards in the world? And the answer was overwhelmingly as a response, yes. And then the following question was, what's Kylian Mbappe's best position? And the answer overwhelmingly was left wing.
Yeah.
So it's like Kylian Mbappe is in the best five, probably the best three centre forwards in world football, and yet maybe he's better off the left. And look, that opens up a whole bag of can of worms that we don't need to get into right now. But there is probably a suggestion that, you know, Barcelona have had dreadful injury luck, as we say at the start of the season. And look, part of that is their own fault, and squeezing players as per and doing all those things. But if Kylian Mbappe was to pick up an injury, there doesn't feel any natural replacement, right? Like, Endrick's had, what, 10 minutes this season?
He just doesn't like Endrick.
Clearly, for whatever reason.
Well, I don't think he does any of the things on or off the ball that he likes.
Gonzalo Garcia is someone he liked in the summer. Completely different profile of forward to Kylian Mbappe, and would have to completely adjust the entire team structure, which would take time.
Man.
You're hustling. And look, that's fine.
This is all just one big ploy to get Doogie to talk about hustling.
I think Garcia can fill a role, right? If they need to put a man in the box, etc., they've got a Gonzalo Garcia to play that role, which is important. But I do wonder with Real Madrid right now, and maybe this, you know, works itself out over the course of the season. Maybe Vinicius gets back up to goal-scoring form. I don't think he's been at his very best. I also think he's been better than certain people have given credit for over the course of the season thus far. But I would be a little bit intrigued what would happen and how they'd look out.
Is it Jude Bellingham?
It might be, but also that's a very different type of player as
It is, but there is a very recent example of this working quite well. Like Jude's just stepping in as the nine for months.
For sure, but then you're asking Vinicius and whoever's on the right-hand side to play different roles to what he's been asking him to do all season long, yeah. Which feels like almost a step backwards in the wrong direction in terms of the team.
I get you, but you know, I feel like the last few... pretty much every time I watch Real Madrid, I look at the attacking alignment and I think it looks a bit different to what I saw before. Now, obviously, it all changes and moves around on the pitch anyway. But I feel like he's gone with a diamond once. I'm pretty sure because I'm never quite sure with Xabi Alonso.
No.
I've watched a 4-4-2, I've watched a 4-3-3, I've watched a diamond.
We've definitely watched a three at the back as well because my guy Fran Garcia got a run out of left wing. Also, justice for Fran Garcia, by the way.
Get him a few more minutes.
The two times he's played this season, and I will look admittedly caveat where they were against Kaira Almaty and Levante, but Real Madrid have won 5-0 and 4-1 both times that Fran Garcia's
he's
got
energized
on the pitch
by the competition.
I love the Duracell bunny Fran Garcia, man. Like, free my guy.
Yeah. So I think the answer where there might be Jude. It might be Gonzalo Garcia, but it might also be Jude. And obviously we've seen a little bit of maybe Rodrigo or Vinicius moonlighting. It does move around. It's a fair question. What happens when you take out by far one of your best players? Yeah, bad things. Hopefully.
We've seen that already at Barcelona, and like it doesn't seem to be one of the... Look, maybe he goes through the whole... hopefully everyone stays injury-free. Like, we want to see all the best players playing all of the time. It's not I hope he goes down, because I don't. Like, this Real Madrid look fun with Kylian Mbappe up front. I'm really enjoying seeing it. But... it's worth bearing in mind, if we're having those conversations about City and Erling Haaland, I feel it feels reasonable to bring it up in the same way for Kylian Mbappe.
Doogie, do you think City are more reliant on Erling Haaland than Madrid are on Mbappe?
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
I would agree with that.
100%.
I would agree with that.
Whilst Marmoush and Cherki were out, sure.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much anymore.
We'll have to see.
I've just got so much more faith in so many of Real Madrid's supporting cast than I do. And I like Doku and Savio, and I'm actually quite bored of every time Man City drop points and Haaland doesn't score, which doesn't really happen anymore. People just instantly go, oh, Doku and Savio aren't as good as Sterling and Sané.
I'm terrified of Doku. Genuinely, he's so scared of him.
He's having a great season. He's just not a finisher. It's a bit like someone like Rafinha. They're obviously an amazing player. They're just not a natural goal scorer yet.
Wales are going to be having nightmares of Jeremy Doku for years to come.
Yeah, I'm very scared of Doku. I don't understand it when people say that sort of stuff. Look, Madrid's depth can easily be tested in the way that others have already this season. The fact that they were at the Club World Cup would suggest that they are going to have some cascading injury problems over the course of the campaign that they are going to have to deal with. And while they do have a nice deep squad, Doogie, you've mentioned it, and we've talked about quite a lot of the options, there are probably four players in this team that I don't know where you can look. And, you know, Mbappe is one of them. And Tchouaméni is absolutely another one. I mean, I watched Camavinga play right mid last night at Anfield, which was very weird. Like, that was
He did that really well in the Clásico, though. Like, he played really well there coming off that side and affecting those switch passes that we talked about before.
Yeah, I get it. But I was also watching Guler play deep midfield. And I was like, I think this is wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not the manager, but that looks weird. And they got hammered. Right. Okay. So my take on this is that Madrid are they're definitely a slow burn. They get better and better and better, injury permitting, through the season as Alonso's defensively conscious tactics kick in and start to move Madrid through the gears. No concerns about the attack or the ability to score goals, or really the depth of the squad, injury permitting. But what I want to see from them before I put them in the Champions League conversation is, can you take on more and more of those off-the-ball ideas and become a real force? Because Barcelona, for their, you know, high-risk, high-line, whatever. I mean, have you seen the defender box? They're absolutely awful. When people say, too risky playing on the halfway line, I say it's too risky for them to defend in the box. So, whatever. But their style is entrenched, and it is a superpower of theirs. And the same can be said for Arsenal. Real Madrid don't have that. They are a work in progress. I will say, though, that while that puts them as a question mark for the Champions League, and it's a we'll see later in the season, where are you in March? They are good enough, even in this mode, to win La Liga.
Yeah.
Because they're good enough to beat 18 of the teams quite easily. And then it really is just coming down to the variables. And they already have a Clásico win in the bank, which is absolutely massive. So I don't think they have to get that much better to win La Liga. I just think the next step would be Champions League.
You also are looking at the fact that Atletico Madrid are nowhere near it in the title race this year. It's a two-horse race, quite clearly, I would say. Although Atletico Madrid have been a lot better in the last month, but that start really wasn't good enough. It's also just such a culture change. Like, when was the last time Real Madrid had a kind of structured possession style manager who was also, you know, willing to dig in and be defensive. Like, it's been a while. Maybe, I mean, Mourinho probably didn't have so many like systems of play inbuilt into his side as well. It feels like it's been ages.
Just googling former managers.
I've been really impressed by Xabi Alonso making the tough decisions, getting the most out of these young players. And a lot of the new signings, if we're looking at Huijsen, Carreras and Mastantuono as successes, given the age they arrived at and the experience they arrived at, arriving at a club the calibre of Real Madrid, I've been really impressed. The one thing that I think could not blow it up per se, but cause a real ruckus is if by the end of the year it's clear that Vinicius Junior wants to leave and that becomes a story that kind of envelops the entire season. But at the moment, I would be very, very surprised. I mean, it's draw dependent, of course, but they look like a Champions League semi-finalist and a potential La Liga champion, which on the basis of your first year in a new club, I think you take that.
I think you would, absolutely. Right, I think that'll do it.
That'll do it.
Time to say goodbye. Thank you, Doogie.
Thank you, Sam.
And thank you, Jack. Sorry for not introducing you.
That's all right, Sam. Bring back Doogie as host, is what I say. No, you're all good. It was a pleasure as ever. It's great to have you back, pal.
What a return. Forgot to introduce one of the three people on the podcast.
Yeah, and we spoke for a good 25 minutes about mentioning Jack.
One of the other three people is me.
Fantastic.
Oh, dearie me. Right, final thank you goes to you, Rex Squad. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.